We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam's third canto, chapter 33, entitled Activities of Kapila, text number 2. Devahutiruvacha Atapya junta salile sayana Bhutindriya tatma mayam vapuste Guna pravam sadasesa bijam Tajo swayam yas jatarabjajata Devahuti uvacha. Devahuti said, Atayapi, moreover, Ajaha, Lord Brahma, Antasalile, in the water, Shayanam, lying, Bhuta, the material elements, Indriya, the senses, Artha, the sense objects, Atma, the mind, Mayam, pervaded by, Vapu, body, Te, your, Guna Pravaham, the source of the stream of the three modes of material nature, Sat, manifest, Ashisha, of all, Bijam, the seed, Tadyo, meditated upon, Swayam, himself, Yat, of whom, Yatara, from the abdomen, Abja, from the lotus flower, Jataha. Translation. Devahuti said, Brahma is said to be unborn because he takes birth from the lotus flower, which grows from your abdomen, while you lie in the ocean at the bottom of the universe. But even Brahma simply meditated upon you, whose body is the source of unlimited universes. Purport. Brahma is also named Aja, he who is unborn. Whenever we think of someone's birth, there must be a material father and mother, for thus one is born. But Brahma, being the first living creature within this universe, was born directly from the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, the Vishnu form lying down in the ocean at the bottom of the universe. Devahuti wanted to impress upon the Lord that when Brahma wants to see him, he has to meditate upon him. You are the seat of all creation, she said. Although Brahma was directly born from you, he still has to perform many years of meditation, and even then he cannot see you directly face to face. Your body is lying within the vast water at the bottom of the universe, and thus you are known as Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. The nature of the gigantic body is also explained in this verse. That body is transcendental, untouched by matter. Since the material manifestation has come from his body therefore existed before the material creation. The conclusion is that the transcendental body of Vishnu is not made of material elements. The body of Vishnu is the source of all other living entities, as well as the material nature, which is also supposed to be the energy of that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devahuti said, you are the background of the material manifestation and all created energy. Therefore, you're delivering me from the clutches of Maya by explaining the system of Sankhya philosophy is not so astonishing. But your being born from my abdomen is certainly wonderful because, although you are the source of all creation, you have so kindly taken birth as my child. That is most wonderful. Your body is the source of all the universe, and still you put your body within the abdomen of a common woman like me. To me, that is most astonishing. Sometimes the Vaishnavas are contemplating their good fortune. So this is a important aspect of Krishna consciousness that every once in a while one must meditate on his good fortune, not just in some automatic way. Oh, I have such good fortune. Oh, I have such good fortune. Oh, I have such good fortune. But rather, in the same way as Devahuti does here. That Devahuti is thinking that Lord Brahma is the topmost living being, and somehow or other, therefore, Lord Brahma is getting the most special way to appear in this world. Lord Brahma, he does not have to take birth like any other living being. He does not need to become the son of an ordinary father and mother, but rather Lord Brahma directly appears from the body of the Supreme Lord on the lotus flower that comes from the navel of the Lord. So what a wonderful birth or appearance Lord Brahma has. In one sense, it's not a birth. He is therefore described as Aja. So Kunti Devi was thinking about that. Of all souls within the entire universe, Lord Brahma is getting this facility because he's the most pious living entity. The most pious of all gets this facility. And yet, what am I getting? Right? I am getting something even better, something even greater, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in my womb. Although I don't have all that piety to be such a wonderful personality like Lord Brahma, I am just a conditioned soul. I am just have taken just an average birth in this world, and yet the Supreme Lord appears in my womb, and in this way I get the closest physical proximity of the Supreme Lord. Subsequently, the Supreme Lord lives with me, and although Lord Brahma is born on that lotus flower, he is at the same time also at a distance of the Lord. He can go and he can communicate with the Lord, but for that he has to go to the shore of the ocean of milk, from where he can offer prayers and meditate, but he cannot just approach the Lord. But I, first of all, carried the Lord in my womb. Second of all, brought him up as my son, as my child, played with him as a mother, right? Held him very close. And all along, I'm just associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How great is my fortune? So this exercise where Devahuti with intelligence is analyzing her good fortune is very nice and more commonly done. We're seeing how Narada Muni is reminding Yudhisthira Maharaj of his great fortune, because he's saying, think of Prahlad. Prahlad was just being protected by the Supreme Lord in all conditions. When Hiranyakasipu mercilessly tried to arrange to kill Prahlad, have him thrown in a pit of snakes, pierced with tridents by demoniac Rakshasas, throw him off a cliff as well, still not dead, to get him trampled by the feet of elephant. And that didn't work either. It's getting heavy. We have to do something. Prahlad. So, Prahlad, you see this sword? Yes. Sharp, Prahlad. This sword, Prahlad, is for you. Prahlad, now where is your Lord? So, Prahlad was personally being protected by the Supreme Lord, who appeared for him in the form of Nrisingadev and protected him, and so on. So how great is Prahlad's good fortune? Yet it is stated that the fortune of Maharaj Yudhisthira was still greater than that of Prahlad. Why? Because Nrisingadev appeared and then again left Prahlad after some time. It was a short appearance of the Lord and a short association. Whereas the Pandavas, they lived with the Lord their whole life. Always. Right? Sometimes Krishna was in Dwarka, but then they would visit him and so on. Right? Their whole life Krishna was accessible and there as their family member. Therefore, it is stated that the good fortune of the Pandavas is considered greater even than the good fortune of Prahlad Maharaj. Although Prahlad's good fortune is inconceivable, right? Because we haven't experienced that kind of protection, right? When we fell, right, then we broke something, right? Or when we made a wrong step, we sprained our ankle and so on. We are not expecting that the Lord will make some arrangement to catch us when we jump out of the window, right? We are quite convinced that that might be the end, or at least a long time in the hospital. So considering that, how special was the protection Prahlad received? Because how great was his devotion? But yet, the Pandavas got more mercy. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita is also a book dedicated to the same principle, comparing the mercy that different devotees got and how one devotee still got more mercy than the other devotee, more personal attention. And there it is pointed out that the topmost mercy was received by the gopis of Vrindavan, because no one was able to capture particularly that form of the Lord, the original form of the Lord. For Prahlad, the Lord appeared in the form of Nrisingadev. For Gajendra, the elephant who was bitten by the crocodile, which is a painful thing, a crocodile on your foot, and still he prayed to the Lord and offered him a lotus flower when the Lord appeared to save him. So that's something, right? When a crocodile is hanging on your leg, to still be in a devotional mood, right? And for this, he received all the mercy. But still, it was not Lord Krishna in his original form who appeared. It was not Govindam Adipurusham. It was Narayana who appears from Vaikuntha. And in that sense, the devotion expressed towards Lord Narayana and the relationship is always touched by awe and reverence. Therefore, the gopis of Vrindavan, they got the greatest mercy, because here the Supreme Lord became the most intimate. And they were able to capture that Supreme Lord by their devotional service. Therefore, they are considered the most fortunate devotees. And therefore, it is stated that we understand that we can never be in competition. There's no question in competition. Therefore, we see that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are becoming the assistants of these devotees. And actually, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, therefore, become Manjaris, right? So Manjari means, as we know, also the flower of the Tulasi is called Manjari. It has many, many small little flowers on it. And Manjari is also a word used for flower petals, right? So they are the flower petals. So it's said that the Manjaris, they never have a personal, physical relationship with Krishna, right? They are assisting. Srimati Radharani, yes, she is embraced by Krishna. But the Manjaris, such as Rupa Manjari, are assisting and are actually not having such a relationship. That is the nature of being the servant of the servant of the servant. So not for me, but simply being the servant. This is our movement. In our movement, there are so many personalities that it is inconceivable. We have all kinds, right? Very colorful people, other types that almost disappear into the wall, that don't stand out at all, that just blend into the background. Another face in the crowd. And real characters, right? So it takes all kinds. I saw last year in Vrindavan, during the Vyasa Puja of Srila Prabhupada, different disciples of Srila Prabhupada were speaking, and there was Garga Muni, right? one of the first disciples of Srila Prabhupada from the very, very early days, who is like not an orthodox type of devotee. He looks like someone from New York City. Right? He had tight pants and a huge belly, right? Huge, and he had a tiger skin vest on over his t-shirt, which was emerging. The belly was emerging in the middle, and his hair was somewhat on the punkish side, with some sort of huge sika in the back, and here, lots of hair there. So he didn't look exactly like the traditional Vaishnava, and he's also not so much trying to be that. But one thing is there. One thing is there, and he made that very clear. He got on the stage and he said, there might be many people who would rather not see me here on this stage. He knows very well, right? He said, you know, and I can appreciate that, you know. I can appreciate that. He said, you know, but there's one thing that I can just never forget. And that is that there was one person in this world, right? One person who just treated me differently. He said, and that I can never forget. I can never forget that first time that he sent me that letter, right? And that he signed it with those three words. Those three words, right, that became the most important for me in my whole life. Those three words that meant everything for me in my whole life. He said, those three words I can never forget. He said, when he sent me that first letter, right, and he signed it with your ever well wisher. He said, then I was sold. He said, after that, how could I ever leave him? Right? Even if everybody wants me to go, I will never leave him. Right? In this spirit, he stood there, and you could really see, you know, something is here. Something is here. So we have a movement with all kinds of personalities, but it is Srila Prabhupada that unites us. Therefore, everyone needs to develop that relationship with Srila Prabhupada. Not to the exclusion of everyone else, but we should become the servants of Srila Prabhupada. That's not, as we know very well, a matter of lip service. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila chapter 19, we find the chapter where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is instructing Srila Rupa Goswami. And he begins to explain about different people that take birth in different positions. And he begins with very low birth. He begins to describe so many are in the animal species. Then finally, 400,000 different types of human species. And many of those are subhuman, actually, dvipadapasu, two-legged animals, etc. And then finally he comes and there. Finally, there are some who take to devotional service, one out of so many millions. And he says, and those, out of those who take to devotional service, he said, more than half are only rendering lip service. It's right there in the translation, lip service. Right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's verse, Prabhupada's translation, and so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu condemned this lip service. So lip service means we offer some flower petals. Lip service means we are here to say Gurudev, Guru Maharaj. But that's not enough. One must fulfill Srila Prabhupada's desire. We must do something for Srila Prabhupada. As Prabhupada said, you are Americans, right? But it's not enough to just say that you're American. In order to be American, you must do something American. Then you are American, right? If you're not doing anything American, then you're not American. In the same way, it's not enough to just say, I'm a Vaishnava. You must do something. And what needs to be done is to establish in the whole world the supremacy of Lord Krishna. Everywhere we must preach. We must preach in different ways. We must go out to the people, because the people will not come to us. We can here in Amsterdam dig ourselves in the temple, you know, Hare Krishna temple. Maya, stay out, right? Watch out, soldiers of Maya. We have gulab jamuns here, right? And we are ready, you know, with these ISKCON bullets to fire any time when you come with your Maya to intrude in our Hare Krishna world. Stay out. We have sniff tests on the door. And if you don't smell right, sorry, this is our Hare Krishna world. Oh, we need protection, for sure. But somehow or other, we need a program to establish clearly in the world that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have to make Dutch people understand that we've got a better way of life, and that they've lost it. Right? We have to convince the intelligent people. So we have to preach intelligently. If we don't preach intelligently, then what will happen is we'll be like a ship without a rudder, and all kinds of people will come. So it takes a lot to be a follower of Prabhupada. Right? And that's what he wanted. And therefore he spent all his time training his intimate man. Whew. He asked once in a group of senior disciples, his leaders, and he said, what will it take for this movement to go on? And Brahmananda finally, first it was quiet, and finally Brahmananda said, sincerity, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, it's not enough. It's not enough. What more is there? You know, is there anything more than sincerity? Isn't that giving everything? And Prabhupada said, no, it's not enough. It takes intelligence also. Right. So intelligence in Krishna consciousness is considered something that can grow, yeah, that we can develop and that we can cultivate by understanding thoroughly what Krishna wants from us. Tadami buddhi yogam tam means intelligence. Krishna gives us the intelligence how to come to him. Yes. So this intelligence means that in all situations, right, we just put the interest of Krishna first. And when we do that, then it becomes glorious. And if we don't, it will become painful. It will be struggling. This is the nature of material world. That must be done by everyone. And those who cannot do that will stay behind. Many came, but into this movement, and still have their connection, but somewhere along the line became compromised. They lost that cutting edge of putting Krishna, right? Krishna's interest before any other interest. And that we have to do. And that doesn't matter then which ashram, etc. In every ashram, the same thing. Krishna's interest first, right? That we have to do. Somehow or other, we have to struggle. This struggle is what Krishna wants to see. It is the material world, and this is Krishna's plan, that we struggle like this to put his interest first. And when we do so, everything becomes more and more wonderful. We become so inspired. Then Krishna consciousness is very nice, and everything will work out, and we'll get the best association. The more we will actually take this path, the more we will be recognized by Vaishnavas who are also taking it, and they'll take us up, and they'll give us everything. And this is wonderful. See, because this is what is needed. There are many Vaishnavas who have achieved amazing qualities and amazing insights and amazing energy. And the more we are also just putting the interest of Krishna first, the more they'll bestow their mercy upon us. And then we realize that we are only small and insignificant in their association, but they're kind upon us, and we become their servants. And then, somehow or other, they'll also lift us up, and then we turn around and can lift up others. And some people will come, some people will go in our lives. Some people will go ahead of us, and some will stay behind. What can we do? But we cannot be delayed. We must go forward. We must go forward in pure devotional service. And it is never known who will emerge, right? Who will emerge from the crowd? That you don't know. There is a crowd in the Sankirtan movement of Kanista Adhikaris, of neophyte devotees who are dragging their feet and always umming and aahing and saying, oh, you know, I try, but it's so hard, you know. Oh, it's so difficult. That crowd is there. And that crowd deserves recognition. That crowd deserves friendship and so on. But still, I will come and go. I cannot stay. With that cannot be my everyday association. It cannot be. My everyday association must be devotees who say, it doesn't matter what, I sacrifice anything for the interest of Krishna, whatever it is. I'll just go that path. Then there are still many ways that it can be done. Right? Obviously, one can make so many sacrifices for Krishna. We cannot make them all at the same time. We must make one, make a choice, and just stick to it. Just take it, oh well, this is what I'm going to be. Like, for example, somehow or other, the Vaishnavas wanted me to get involved in management when I was quite a new devotee. And the arrangement was that I was involved in management for a while, but then my former wife became ill in India, quite ill, and then our spiritual master sent us to the West so that she could recover. And then I was here for a while, and then I was free from all the management. And it was my chance to escape. So I was ready to escape, and I made a deal that I would go and open a preaching center. And I was ready. I bought a projector, and, you know, I was all ready to go to India and open a preaching center. And when I arrived in India, then our sannyasi Surabhi Swami was there. Big Swami was waiting for me and said, well, you know, this may have to wait, you know, this preaching center. It's very nice, but now we need you for something else. And there was management again. And, you know, like that, it went on for many years. And so it wasn't exactly my choice, but it happened. And then I did it. And part of me, of course, liked it also. And other part didn't. And I was realizing, because of these things, some of my interests I cannot pursue. Like, I could have studied Sanskrit because I'm good at languages, right? Language is easy for me. Any language I can learn, you know, doesn't matter what. And I already have I've studied Latin in the past, so I've already a connection. I could have done it. But not possible, right? Because there was another choice. Then I could have been a scholar too. I could have been a real scholar, right? Really, really study like anything. I like that. But also was not destined. It wasn't what the Vaishnavas wanted. Because ultimately, that's spiritual life. One must seek a Vaishnava some Vaishnava, and one must simply ask that Vaishnava, what will I do? And then one must submit himself to the Vaishnavas in his life and always serve in that way. That's the path of putting the interest of Krishna first. Right? One cannot become a bulldozer and say, I'll put the interest of Krishna first. Right? Bulldozers, they knock over some Vaishnavas on the way, and the result is bulldozers begin to think that they are too important. So if we are bulldozers by nature, or bulls, or bulldogs, or any other variety in the bull series, right? If we are anything in the bull series, then my advice is to control this tendency somehow or other. Here comes sense control and mind control in the picture. We have a philosophy, and there is a part of our nature that just needs to be controlled. And we have to learn to control that. And everyone has something, right? So whether it is a bullish thing or some other thing, it doesn't matter. But ultimately, certain things have to be controlled. So that we also have to learn. Also for the interest of Krishna. Sometimes the opposite is the case. Like there was one devotee in our temple, and he was just too much in the mode of goodness. It was just absolutely too much. He was just too attached to the mode of goodness. Could never get a little passionate for Krishna, right? And it's like, it was really a problem in doing practical devotional service. Because sometimes just things were going wrong, and every time you gave him some service again, it didn't work out, right? Because he just lacked that little bit of passion to apply himself and struggle a bit with the material energy. Because the material energy is not exactly a very soft and surrendered creature, right? The material energy is rebellious and really like slippery like anything, right? And sometimes seems to march along very nicely and then suddenly take a wild jump. And then you get back on track, you. Okay, watch out. Huh? Don't try to get funny with me. You have to hold the material energy tight. So you need that little bit of determination to put the material energy in a certain form and shape. And the material energy never automatically goes in the right form for serving Krishna. It is a big headache. Therefore, Prabhupada spoke about his headache, right? And that we should take some of his headache. And that headache was to take this material energy, put it in a form which is favorable for Krishna. It doesn't go on automatic. It doesn't work. It only works if we really apply ourselves and struggle and see it through, right? One must see it through. It's not nowadays on the airports, there's all the time this advertisement, which is there's a beach and there's the sea. And in the letters on the sand, they have written, I am your idea. Right? I'm your idea. And, you know, if you don't do something, right, about it now, right, and you can see the water is coming in, right, washing over idea. So millions of ideas, the greatest ideas. The Chinese say, I dreamt 1,000 new paths. I woke up and walked the old one. Right? So this is going on in the world. Right? Ideas by the millions, by the zillions. But who puts his idea into practice? Because it's difficult. And it's not good. It's not good enough to give a little push, right? Okay, I tried. You know, I tried. I pushed, but it didn't go. Right? No, one has to actually go all the way and push the thing all the way to the other side and make sure it is there and that it stands there properly, thoroughly. And for this, one has to sacrifice in the service of Krishna. This is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. We all came to this movement thinking, Jai, it's over now. Haribo, bliss, nectar. We have for years struggled with this horrible material energy. We are free. Now we don't have to bother with this anymore. Many of us even gave away all our wealth before we joined and everything, and then joined empty-handed, thinking now we're just going to be Hare Krishnas and it's all going to be so wonderful, etc. Only to find out that that Prabhupada was very practical and wanted things very orderly and clean and organized, etc., and was constantly pushing and training his senior man to be on top of things. Right? And everyone, and it was just very intense. Right? Now that Srila Prabhupada has left, ISKCON, the general body of devotees, have slipped out of the tight grip, right? The tight grip of the standards of Srila Prabhupada actually implemented, of like certain standard of cleanliness, certain standards of maintenance, certain standards of attentiveness to the detail and so on, right? That's been slipping like anything, slipping in a sliding. And now we are more on the spontaneous platform. Right? And but the facilities that we are maintaining are limited. Like during Rath Yatra, I was shortly meeting Madhu Sevita, who is a senior member in our movement, Madhu Sevita Prabhu, who is wise, and who said, we were talking about the movement, we were not talking about Amsterdam, okay? We're talking about ISKCON. And he said that the way ISKCON's going, we have to really, really think about it if we want to have any temples at all. Because if we don't make like a good plan to have temples, then in a number of years, right, we'll lose so many temples. And he's right. We see, you may not know, but I know, because I see so many temples in a state of neglect in our movement. And I know it wasn't Prabhupada's desire. Prabhupada wanted every detail of the temple to be, as we call, spick and span, right? And everything totally KC, everything totally dynamic, everything totally happening. Many ideas, many programs, a positive response, not just us living in our own little Hare Krishna island, in our own little Hare Krishna bubble. No, but really coming, doing the needful, whatever needs to be done to rise to the occasion. That's what is required. And that first of all means cooperation. And cooperation means Vaishnava etiquette, right? Because otherwise there is no cooperation. Cooperation means that Vaishnavas must have respectful dealings, right? This is the reason why deity worship was instituted. It is said in the Treta Yuga, deity worship was first introduced because people began to have disrespectful dealings to each other. And well, it's gone a long way from that. The word disrespectful wouldn't express what is happening in modern times. And so, what we need is to accept etiquette. As soon as you step on the altar, something has changed. You cannot do anything you want anymore. It's all prescribed. Yeah? On the altar, you cannot just walk around and do a little pirouette in front of the deities just because you feel like it. On the altar, you don't take extra steps, right? You don't go walk up and down in front of Krishna unnecessarily. You go on the altar to do a specific thing. You go on the altar to close the curtains or to set up the tables for the offering, to put down the cushions for Krishna. So and so on. You wipe things so everything is clean so that he can receive the offering. Yeah. But it's all prescribed. So the whole idea is some Vaishnava etiquette is necessary. not like an oppressive thing, but like a nice formula. And that must be there for this movement to be successful. If you don't embrace the Vaishnav etiquette, then in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, between the dealings between Sanatana Goswami and Jagatananda Pandit. Jagatananda was much younger, and Jagatananda on one occasion started to instruct Sanatana Goswami. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Who is this Jaga? Who does this Jaga think he is?" Right? Huh? Although Jagatananda was obviously a great pure devotee of the Lord. But still, Lord Chaitanya didn't appreciate, and he said, "Who is he to instruct you, Sanatana Goswami? I even take advice from you. How can he do this?" He said, "I am never pleased with anyone who is not following, observing the Vaishnava etiquette." So this is like, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying it, giving it to us straight in the face. Right? He tells us there, really, that he's not going to be pleased. Well, if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not pleased with us, what would happen? Then we will dry up. We'll become a dry bhakti lata creeper, right? The leaves will dry up. Now in the beginning, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also the most merciful, the one who accepts everyone, the one who accepts even people who are have their hang-ups, who are cut up, who have their frustrations, who have their traumas, who have their idiosyncrasies, who have their particular conditioning. But with time, as our knowledge is increasing, our responsibility is increasing. The more we hear, we are all here in Bhagavatam class every day, and the more we hear, the more our responsibility increases. The more we read, right, the more our duty is to follow the fine line. The greater the reactions will be, the more knowledge we have. This is the nature it is. So with time, it becomes more and more important to actually accept this also. Because we are to be a movement, it's not that we are meant to be out here in the cities of the world and hang posters all the time, it's Hare Krishna is the way, or stand on the street corner with the Bhagavad Gita, this is the way, Krishna is the way, Krishna is the way, Krishna is the way. That's not our thing. That's other groups, and oftentimes we have not taken to those other groups ourselves because we felt there was a certain amount of hypocrisy. There was like just external form of religion, but then internally the purity and the dedication was missing. So are we becoming the same? Hare Krishna. But where is the internal dedication behind it also there? So this must be there to give it real depth. Yes, the Maha Mantra is so powerful, but in order to give it real depth, we have to really go deep ourselves in dedicating ourselves to this this chanting, to becoming devotees as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted, to become humbler than a blade of grass, to always seek the blessings of Vaishnavas, of senior Vaishnavas, then we'll advance rapidly. It's the only way. And otherwise, you'll be in the movement, but there are many levels in this movement, and you just won't be able to break through to those higher levels, or as I may say, sometimes compared to circles. There are circles around Prabhupada. Right? There are like, there's an inner circle of followers of Prabhupada. And then there's another circle, and another circle. So devotees are like circles. So we can decide in which circle we want to be. Right? But if we want to come really close in the inner circle of Prabhupada's really dedicated followers, then we have to become, take the fine lines. Right? Then we have to read the fine instructions and follow them all. With practice, of course. I know. I also am only practicing. It's not so easy
to never say something wrong. I also say something, I say things and say, why did I say that? Uh-oh, it was too strong. I shouldn't have done this, shouldn't have done that. You know, so many times I may think like that. But then, so there's always a desire to improve. Always we're just thinking, yes, I should do better. So patience is allowed, time can be taken, but it must be done. Right? Then things will take off. And if everyone just takes that position, in all honesty, acts for the interest of Krishna, and we all are, then I'm sure that we will find the way to go forward in Krishna consciousness together. And when we're together, I think then we can do more to move that material energy that is so difficult to move, right? The immovable, in legal terms, they speak of immovable property, right? I would say this is an immovable property, right? It's like, it's immovable so far, right? So, I'm trying to speak from my heart, and naturally, I'm speaking from what I'm associating with. It has an effect on my consciousness. But still, I'm not trying to take the Bhagavatam and put it like a big umbrella on the present situation. Really, the present situation, whatever it is, let it be. The hidden purport of my lecture is not the present situation, although my lecture is relevant to the present situation of the temple. But my lecture goes far beyond, right? Really, the perspective of my lecture is much greater and much bigger, and it really is talking about us as individuals. What are we going to do with our spiritual life? Where are we going to go? Everyone has, in Christianity to say, everyone has his cross, right? Everyone has to carry his cross. Everyone has to carry his burden. Everyone has to carry his karma. Everyone has to carry his limitations. Everyone has to overcome his karma. And no one can say, I cannot. No one. No one. I cannot say it. You cannot say it. And if we think, if anybody thinks that his karma is worse than anybody else, that's not true. Because everybody's got something that's really bad and something that's good. Somehow or other, whatever it may be, even if we have particularly bad karma, still, we must overcome it. There's no other way. This is what Krishna wants from us. And Krishna will help us to overcome it. It will be done. Must be done. We can do it. Everyone. No matter what. Because Ananyas Chintayatomam Ye Janapariyupasate Te Sam Nichabiyuktanam Yogukseema Vahami Aham. Krishna says, I will preserve what you have and carry what you lack. So with faith, we must do it. Krishna will help us. We will do it. So let us not stay behind. Let us go forward. And then we will find, we come closer and closer in the association of Krishna, and closer in the association of Krishna's wonderful devotees. And as a result, everything becomes really very deep, and we're always inspired. And this is Krishna consciousness. Now, I'll mentally prepare you for questions. Questions are already there. Okay. Avadhuta is eager. Yes.
Yeah, I guess, you know, when there's differences, when there's plans and differences in plans and strong feelings on either side, then there has to be some dialogue. And sometimes the dialogue goes on for some time. But ultimately, it has to come to some agreement. Right? One cannot remain at a point where there's no agreement. That's not Vaishnava. Vaishnava means somebody's got to bow down sometimes.
It's like I have also many times in my life had disagreements, and sometimes I stood up very strong, and even sometimes disagreed with the GBC body, and since I was on an international level, I argued in the GBC body, right? And I've taken the opposition position sometimes in the meetings and stood up, right? But then in the end, when there was a judgment, I had to adjust. This has happened to me. Yeah. And this question came then. I was leading a whole group of devotees in opposition to a particular resolution about reinitiation. Disciples of fallen gurus. I was like one of the opposition leaders. Right? It was a huge discussion. And in the end, especially Tamal Krishna Maharaj, was very much opposing me. And I was doing really good. And I was winning over votes already. I might have won. Because what I said, they had made a resolution that all those who were, or a proposal for a resolution, that all those whose gurus had fallen ought to be reinitiated, that it was a compulsory thing. So I said, we should change one word. I think the resolution is very good, but we should just take out one word, this word compulsory. Huh? Otherwise, it's very good. Of course, so if you go for a one-word amendment, you could get it in meetings. That's only one word change in a resolution. So I know these things. So I knew what I was doing. So I was leading that opposition. But then Tamal Krishna Maharaj opposed it, and at one point he said, I think it's a Trojan horse. I was like, really, like, he was like, a Trojan horse, you know. He told me, like, I guess it was a Trojan horse. Like, I must admit, he was okay. He figured me out. He saw through my tricks. I must admit, it was a Trojan horse, actually. Because I wanted to, in this way, just block the whole thing. So anyway, it didn't work, to make a long story short. And they passed that resolution in 1989. And then, at the end, they asked me, so, Harikesh asked me, he said, so what are you going to do now? Right? What are you going to do now? And I said, well, I guess I'm going to surrender. I guess. And then he was very tall, right? He was very tall. And very American, you know. And these American people are very loud, right? They speak really loud. You know, when Americans are in a shop, you know, you can follow the whole private conversation. Darling! Right? So he stood there with his loud American voice and stood with his finger over my head like that. And he said, he says he's going to do it! He says he's going to do it. Totally embarrassing me in front of everyone. Anyway, oh boy, an American movement, right? It's not always easy to be part of an American movement, being a European, you know. Well, an American Italian, you know. I mean, he has Italian roots, but he's a New Yorker, you know. He's a nice New Yorker. I mean, but it was okay, you know. Anyway, I got a little bit embarrassed, but I tolerated. And I decided, well, I guess now I got to go all the way, and now I got to go down to Tamal Krishna Maharaj and apologize and all these things. So I did, you know, I did. And so I had a good relationship with Tamal Krishna Maharaj. We had many disagreements, but it was always in the etiquette, yeah? So we had lots of strong disagreements, you know. One time we had a particular disagreement, and he tricked me. Or he tried to trick me because he invited me to his room and for lunch, you know. So I was thinking, why is Tamal Krishna Maharaj inviting me for lunch? There must be something going on, right? And then he was a real good host, you know, and he had it arranged, and he was arranging that they would put different things on my plate. And then they were serving piping hot cauliflower pakoras. And he said, take, take, take. And just when he had the hot cauliflower pakora in my mouth, he started. he was so good. Oh yeah. This thing was really hot. I couldn't swallow it. It was so hot. And my mouth was full with the cauliflower pakora. And then he started. So it's like, what could I do? He had caught me, you know. So, like that, what to do? I also presented many times arguments in our differences, and sometimes he said, yes, you are right. And sometimes he said, okay, I'm sorry, and he changed his mind. But sometimes he did not. One time I even took it then to the whole GBC body, our disagreement. But whatever it might be, I ultimately bowed down, because he was Tamal Krishnamaraj and I was just not even Swami. And that was it, you know. So I always realized I'm disagreeing with my seniors now, and I can't do that, you know. So I miss him very much, because I have no one to disagree with anymore, like that, you know. Because in many ways, our disagreements were not on the personal level. Our disagreements were disagreements about how to push forward Srila Prabhupada's movement. So we were very much aware that we were both working on the same thing, and therefore we were actually not disagreeing, we were actually working together. And I really take it like that. So it's a great loss that Krishna decided to take Maharaj away. I don't often speak about this thing because it's a little personal, but somehow or other, Chaitanya Charan reminds me of Tamal Krishna Maharaj with his t-shirt yesterday and other things. And since you're asking about this point, about disagreeing with seniors, I thought I'll share with you what was going on. And I also realize that at one particular point in time, there was a major difference in our movement. It was about Narayan Maharaj and whether or not certain senior devotees could go or not. It was a discussion, and it was all happening in the temple where I was temple president, and I stood up very strongly against it. And I know that I was shot for many reasons, that Krishna wanted to teach me many things in one shot, and that one of the things he wanted to teach me was, even for the right cause, you cannot overstep Vaishnava etiquette. That was one of the purports. There are many purports to a bullet in the back, but one of the purports was, even for the right cause, you cannot overstep Vaishnava etiquette. That lesson I learned. It's just, I'm not preaching to anyone. I'm just really giving you like what I learned. If someone has another realization, I wish them well, but I just want to share with you this realization, because a bullet in the back and right through you is not a small event in one's life. It's something major which, definitely makes you think. Right? And obviously, Krishna has something to say with that. So, please, your turn. See, we have our natures, and according to our natures, some people are very submissive, some people are very stubborn, you know. So if you have a stubborn nature, you cannot just suddenly become submissive all at once, you know. So you may at times present arguments. Right? But at one point, when the argument just goes on and on and on, it becomes a point of surrendering to the senior Vaishnavas. That point does come. You cannot go on and on and on and on and on. At one point, it will become an issue between the senior Vaishnavas get involved. See, it goes up and up, and more senior Vaishnavas get involved. And then somewhere, the will of the senior Vaishnavas will have to prevail. And if then someone cannot accept that, then generally you see that person loses all Shakti. Krishna takes away his mercy. That we have seen then. So that's to be considered. So I have never, I know many who felt like, well, you know, this is what I have to do. And they went that way. But I have not done that. I have always said, now I stop. And, you know, because I'm also a Dutch rebel, you know, like all of us. Right? And you know, some are, of course, not Dutch rebels. Some are other nationalities. But whatever, the rebel, we are rebels and have our cause. But, somewhere along the line, surrender also plays. Yeah. I think that it begins with simply devotees in the temple. You have to cooperate with some with the devotees in the temple and ask them, what do you want me to do for Krishna? And it begins there. And then it develops more and more to senior Vaishnavas. It develops into accepting a spiritual master, and not one, but also more, siksha gurus, etc. It develops to that point where we make ourselves dependent on the will of the Vaishnavas and not just on our own plan of what we want to do in Krishna consciousness, but where we also, okay, surrender. And sometimes it's like, I wanted to open a preaching center. I didn't want to become the guest house manager in Vrindavan. That's what we made me instead. You know, I had to sell my projector. I was very attached to it. Yeah. I think so. I think what you can do is you can approach different spiritual masters and leaders in a society and ask them questions without committing yourself to them. You know, not that you ask the question and then immediately say, okay, now I surrender totally to you. Now instruct me, you know, can I please be your disciple? That's too quick. That's artificial. Now, the better way is ask questions. Ask them questions. You meet different senior Vaishnavas. Ask them questions. What to do? Take this guidance. Collect all the ideas and just begin to develop your own vision. See how it fits. And then after some time, you'll begin to see how maybe with some particular senior Vaishnava, it relates to your own inspirations and visions. You know, it clicks in the way he gives you a vision. And then that relationship becomes relevant. You know, and then you might say, yes, now I may actually find a spiritual master in this way, in a natural way. Not like, my God, you know, on the internet I saw there is a site with all the pictures of the gurus, you know. There's like the gurus. They have a whole page with all the pictures, you know. And then you can go like, you know, okay, you close your eyes, and open up. Huh? Something blind choosing of a spiritual master. So that's awkward. But what I'm saying is much more realistic. You know, just ask instructions, ask advice, and see what comes. And if you feel, hey, this makes sense, then follow it. And in this way, you develop some relationship. You say, well, I'll ask more often for advice than of this person because it's good advice. Then it begins to develop. And it's after at one point say, yes, I can see that this relationship could work. But such a relationship must be there. And it can. And then you may have a spiritual master. But then it doesn't stop there. Then there are still many other Vaishnavas. And they also give you good advice. So in this way, you have more than one. You have maybe Diksha Guru and then also Siksha Gurus. And they also inspire and they also give really good instruction at times. So in this way, we're always in the shelter of the Vaishnavas. And unless we come to that, we will not go to the higher levels of Krishna consciousness. We'll stay in the outer circles. We'll not go deep. And then, on the outer circles, material desires come, yeah, again. And yeah, then after some time, you feel like, yeah, I mean, I want to, but it's not really happening, so maybe I need a bit more on the other side also. Yeah, go a bit back to the material side, up and down. Can spend many lifetimes like that. So, yeah. I think that the responsibility is there with all devotees. But naturally, the senior devotees have more responsibility, you know, because they are more experienced, more knowledgeable of what Krishna consciousness should be. And there's that old saying about that one should commend respect and not demand respect. Right? In other words, we must conquer the hearts of the devotees. Senior devotee cannot simply, if he stands up and say, I'm senior, that will be difficult. But if he kind of really conquers the hearts of the devotees, then everyone will accept. that is senior. So we have to try to do that with love, right? And with like real support and with help and looking at people's struggle in spiritual life. Because, you know, we're all in the same boat. It's a tight process, right? Phew. You know, it's not exactly what I was dreaming of and not what Maru Gopal was dreaming of before he became a devotee, right? I had to change my dreams, right? A little bit. Most of us, I think. It's super tight. So we know very well that everyone is experiencing the pinch of being in this narrow process of four regulative principles, 16 rounds, rising early in the morning, even when you're tired, and the whole thing, and, you know, and the Vaishnava etiquette and everything else, right? All the 64 regulative principles of devotional service. You knew there are 64? You thought there were only four, right? Yeah. So all that, right? But we must, with love, right, help people to come up in these things. And I think then it will improve. But Prabhupada also said, he wrote this letter, that ISKCON is not utopia. The not utopia letter. So that's also there. You know, we can't expect that it will always all be smooth sailing. There will be a few sparks and a few things, etc. 18 days, Prabhupada said. Well, you can do 5 seconds. But there's the famous statement of 18 days. Right. And then he was so demanding in the practical sense. This was the philosophy. And then if you look what he wanted, you know, you distribute books, and then he said, just double it, and things like that, you know. And it's like, then they have just decided that they want a temple, and then Prabhupada just wants a bigger place, you know. Every time, you know, like they have finally decided that the big temple in Mayapur is going to be a nice size, and then Srila Prabhupada makes it like, you know, it's like Prabhupada wanted really something, some commitment. Boy, I mean, and wasn't like at all a person like, well, you're very new, take your time to prepare, and I know it's difficult, you need a little more time to get ready for fully following the principles and everything, and you cannot take too much responsibility. No, Prabhupada just say, go to Hong Kong. He told Burijan to go to Hong Kong, actually, together with, and then Burijan said, but I'm all alone, how can I go all alone? And then Prabhupada said, okay, I'll send you a wife. And then he did. And he sent Jagatarini. And Jagatarini had been in a movie together with Mick Jagger, right, in Australia, about Ned Kelly, an outlaw. And she was the female heroine. So, you know, she was she was somebody. And she joined in L.A. And after some time, after not so long, you know, a number of months, Prabhupada sends her to Hong Kong to go marry someone she's never seen, right? And the things they had to do, you know, I mean, two times, right? Marry some guy you don't even know, and then be sent to Hong Kong, right? I mean, it's probably not on the top of your list, you know. If you like noodles, you know, Hong Kong, I mean, it wouldn't be on the top of my list of, if I had a choice in the world, go to Hong Kong, right? But Burijan was sent to Hong Kong, right? And yeah, they married, they did it, and they're still married, right? For many years now. And they made it, and they were different, you know? And they were different. He's like a scholarly school teacher, and she's an actress. You know, it was not always so easy, you know, like different to combine these natures. There was no compatibility tests or astrological charts or anything like that. It was just Prabhupada said, go to Hong Kong, and that was it. I'll send you a wife. Okay, there she came. Wow. So Prabhupada wanted a lot from us, actually. And I feel that we still want that. We want a lot. I must also say, let's go. Let's go forward. Come on. Let's do it. can't sit around and wait, you know, until we're Krishna conscious. Yeah. Let's go now. 1989. Well, in 89, there was the Guru Asraya paper. And if you read the Guru Asraya paper, the Guru Asraya paper says that there should be reinitiation. And it says that, however, if someone cannot, of course, it's not, it cannot be forced, right? But it is the standard. It was established as the standard. So by doing that, in that Guru's Raya paper, they created a social atmosphere that if you didn't do it, right, then gradually we'd become isolated and possibly even not consider to take responsibility in the society. In other words, you would become hampered in preaching, obviously. So the paper had consequences. So therefore, it really, if you translate it properly, that's what it meant. Now, we have, it's still on the records, but we have put it on the shelf, and with the latest upheavals in Europe from the last few years, with Hari case, that old paper hasn't been pulled off the shelf because everyone was thinking then they'll explode, right? The people won't accept it, so they were. But there's nothing else on the books. It's not changed. It's not so much put into practice, but on the books it still stands actually. There's no new resolution passed since. But now we're not enforcing it, but still recommending it. And it is also a good thing to take shelter again from a spiritual master. We did it. And you and me, and even Gangadhar, and we were not the losers. Sometimes we have to cooperate in separation. You know, sometimes we have to cooperate in the bigger picture where we say, okay, we both work independently for this mission, but we're not meant to work together under one roof. I mean, it happens sometimes. It happened to me several times with certain people. They're working for Prabhupada, I work for Prabhupada, but we couldn't work under one roof. Yeah. So that can also be. Maybe we need more than one roof. That's one way of how different people. Ultimately, there must be a willingness to reach a compromise for people with different ideas to work together. And when there's no willing for compromise, then you'll have to separate. Natural. You know, if two people are together, both have to be willing to adjust to the other. And if they're not, then you have to separate. You cannot go on. But then we can still remain dedicated to Krishna. So in the bigger sense, we're still working for the same cause. So we have such relationships also with Vaishnavas. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here again. And looking forward to coming back. I'll come back in September. I don't know for how long, because I have a thing also with Spain that I have some work there, and don't know how long it will take. But I'll come here for a couple of days. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.